Recording in progress.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Alameda County Board of Supervisors Personnel Administration and Legislation Committee. May I have roll call, please?
Supervisor Fortunato Bass.
Present.
Supervisor Tam.
Here. Thank you. We'll start with our federal legislation update.
Good afternoon. Emily Bakke de Silva here with CJ Lake. Both the House and Senate are in session this week. Both are currently scheduled to be in session for the next 2 weeks, and then they would break for the August recess. And as you all know, Congress traditionally is gone the entire month of August. Right now, the focus seems to be kind of FY26 appropriations now that the House and Senate passed the reconciliation bill. And then they're also focused on a rescissions package. And I'll talk about the rescissions package first. I know we talked about this last week, but the Senate is preparing to take up President Trump's proposed $9.4 billion rescissions package before this Friday, which is this the deadline that's in statute, July 18th. As you know, because we talked about this, but the House passed the package back in June, and it's a smaller package, and it would claw back unspent funds from a range of programs, and that's FY25 funding, including global health, public broadcasting, and international assistance from like USAID. And so the talk was if Republicans were able to pass this rescissions package, then the administration would send up bigger packages throughout the year. Again, you know, the Senate has to take it up. Senator Susan Collins, the chair of APPROPES from Maine, and others have voiced concerns about reductions to PEPFAR, which is the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief, and other kind of longstanding bipartisan initiatives. You know, we keep hearing from staff that, you know, the Trump administration, as they've done with the CR, and, you know, we saw it with the reconciliation bill, they are really kind of turning up the heat on senators. And so, you know, I've been told that the president is making calls to individual Republican senators, and that OMB Director Vaught is coming up tomorrow to the Republican Senate lunch in order to kind of twist some arms in the hopes they can get this passed. Assuming they do, and I think we talked about this last week, I think it really does spell trouble for FY26 appropriations and cooperation with Democrats, particularly in the Senate, moving forward, because as you guys know, you need 60 votes in the Senate for APPROPES. And so you do need Democratic votes. And again, with the CR in the spring, and I know we talked about this on PAL, but, you know, Majority Leader Schumer ended up deciding not to force a shutdown. And so voted for, you know, had the Democrats vote for the CR. You can see a scenario now where we could be headed to really tough decisions come September 30th if this rescissions package goes through. And, you know, people are already saying we could be looking at a shutdown come October 1. So, again, this is just the start, but I just kind of wanted to lay it out because it just spells trouble and difficulties for the FY26 process. And as far as FY26, you know, the House was farther ahead than the Senate in terms of markups. And Transportation HUD is supposed to be marked up this week. It will go to subcommittee later today, full committee on Thursday. As soon as we see kind of the committee report that accompanies the Transportation HUD bill, we'll get some stats out to you guys. I saw a quick kind of overview of the T-HUD APPROPES bill. And, you know, the transportation numbers do follow kind of the authorized numbers from the IIJA. As far as HUD, there are some cuts that were proposed. It did look like, and I know we talked about this on a I know there's not much to find kind of uplifting these days, but it did look like they funded CDBG to the levels of last year, around $3 billion. And I know the president's budget request had proposed it, zeroing it out. I know we'd had some conversations about that. So the House is starting to move forward. The Senate held its first markups last week. It got through, I believe, ag appropriations and was moving to commerce, justice, science. They ended up having to recess, and it's because there was a dispute about where the FBI headquarters should be. It needs to move out of its current location in downtown DC. There was a deal made a couple years ago for it to move to Maryland. And the administration is now saying it will not go to Maryland. It will, in fact, stay in DC. And so a number of Democrats ended up objecting to that. And basically, they had to recess the Appropriations Committee because of that and could not move forward. We don't know when they are going to reconvene. So that, coupled with the potential rescissions package, it just, again, it does not bode well for completion of FY26 or even kind of starting in the Senate. Gosh, I don't really have a lot of uplifting things to talk about. The other thing, and I know you guys are tracking, and we've been had some back and forth with social services and healthcare services at the end of last week, but the HHS, I believe it was on Thursday, put out a notice reinterpreting the Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Reconciliation Act. That was basically the welfare law that passed under Clinton, and it would significantly expand what is considered a federal public benefit. Under the law, programs classified as federal public benefits generally require that recipients be U.S. citizens or qualified immigrants. Previous administrations considered such resources to be a community benefit and therefore different from individual benefits like food stamps, Medicaid, and unemployment or disability payments. So now they're talking about potentially SAMHSA block grants, Head Start, Title 10 family planning, community services block grant, healthcare centers. And then USDA put out some similar guidance, and I believe Ed did as well on Friday. There are a lot of unknowns here and a lot of questions. And, I can only assume that lawsuits will be filed. We're still waiting on further guidance. There is a comment period, 30-day comment period. I know your agencies are already working on draft of comments, but I just wanted to flag that as well. I think that's it for my report. The other thing, just real quick, back to appropriations, another thing that kind of doesn't bode well for the Senate to take up is I have heard that the Senate Majority Leader Thune really wants to focus on getting more nominations through the Senate. And so when you do that, that takes up floor time, and appropriations bills take up floor time. So, because of that, again, I just see kind of delays on the FY26 appropriations front. So, that is my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you all may have.
Thank you for that report. I know it's kind of exasperating for you. Supervisor Fortunato Bass, questions, comments?
Thank you so much, Emily, for all of your work. It is quite exasperating, to say the least. And also, thank you for raising the HHS notice. Just one clarification. Has it been published in the Federal Register? Because I understand it will take effect immediately, but then there's 30 days of comment. You know, was it published, and how does that 30-day comment period work in relation to the effectiveness or the effective date?
That's a great question. So it was published, I believe, on Friday.
Okay.
It is interesting because normally there's the comment period, right? Like you follow the Procedures Act, the Administrative Procedures Act. And so there's a comment period. You file comments, you know, it's usually 30 days, 60 days, and then they issue more guidance. And you're right, it said effective immediately, but they are taking comments, and it was a 30-day period. So again, we are just waiting. There are so many questions that we have. I think everyone is just waiting on more guidance from the admin. But yes, and then on Friday, like I said, USDA put something out, and then Department of Ed also put something out similar. So again, as we get kind of more details, I'll let you know, because it is very unclear right now.
Thank you. And To your knowledge, are there any other things like this which are supposed to go into effect immediately that we need to be mindful of?
I say not to my knowledge, but I mean, it's like nothing I've seen before, quite frankly. So there, I mean, I think this caught us all off guard. So there could be things coming that we just are not, and I apologize, we are not able to get ahead of, but not to my knowledge, to answer your question.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you again for that update. I have to put this in perspective, I appreciate the prediction that you had about the CBDG grant, about it was more a show about taking it off, but it's really kind of in there. But when you think about $3 billion in light of a $900 billion impact with the Medicaid cuts, and then even further with the SNAP cuts, I don't think this is going to help overcompensate any of that, right?
No, you're exactly right. I mean, again, the entitlements, when we talk about Medicaid, I mean, those are the huge programs, right? Like discretionary approach, it's just a drop in the bucket. I mean, to your point, exactly. It is. And back to the, real quick, back to the notice, the HHS notice, I'll just add this. I think like so many of the announcements that have been coming out, you know, since January, you know, a lot of it is just to have a chilling effect, quite frankly, right? Like we don't know yet kind of, and so many more details need to come. But it's just the announcement itself that has the chilling effect that then people won't want to go and sign up for these benefits.
Yeah, we've had a lot of shock effects from the various announcements lately. I don't recall the issue that you mentioned on why it's a big deal to have the FBI headquarters in DC versus Maryland, and why that
I know it's
kind of got into the House appropriation issue.
Yeah, it's so just kind of in the inside baseball in like this DC area, but basically Commerce, Justice, Science is that appropriations bill. So Justice, that subcommittee appropriates the funds for the facilities. And so this discussion that has been ongoing for several years, basically FBI needs a new headquarters. And so it was decided in the Biden administration that it would go to a location in Maryland. And their senators had been, you know, very aggressive in trying to ensure that it went to Maryland. And so, again, it came up recently in the last few weeks. I want to say the Trump administration said the headquarters is now moving to, I believe, the Ronald Reagan Building in D.C., which is where AID had their offices. And so it's just kind of down the street from where the FBI currently is. That APROPS bill would fund some of that relocation and the work that needs to be done. And so that was kind of a way to stop it. And again, the conversations got ugly. And so they ended up just recessing. And so again, just layered on top of everything else that's happening, it just makes it that much more difficult, I think, for things to kind of start to move for FY26.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Do we have any public comments or questions on this item from online or in public?
No, I have no speakers for this item.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Emily. Let's move to the state legislation update.
Good afternoon, Amy Costa with Full Moon Strategies, batting cleanup with Emily here and threading the needle of what we're still all trying to figure out here as well. And we did talk last week in PAL a little bit about both Medi-Cal impacts and SNAP. And so we've done a little bit of research and there are some preliminary numbers that have come out, some of which have been provided by the governor. Obviously, the impacts will be profound, and we are going to continue to analyze them. It was noticed this morning in the Daily File that when the legislature reconvenes in August, on August 20th, the Assembly Budget Subcommittee number 7 will be having a hearing on HR 1 impacts in particular. And we anticipate that the Legislative Analyst Office will present at that hearing, and we'll have maybe more of a sense of this crosswalk that Emily was talking about between the federal fiscal year and the state budget year, and kind of when these things will take effect and when policymakers will need to adjust the state budget. We've noted, and the governor came out very strongly against the proposed spending cuts to Medicaid, noting that both changes in program eligibility and work requirements will result in the loss of federal funds as well as healthcare coverage. Changing the redetermination from every 12 months to every 6 months, the governor estimated would lead to a loss of $2.4 billion in federal funds and approximately 400,000 enrollees in California. The bill's work requirement would result in an estimated loss of up to $22.3 billion in federal funds and up to 3 million in California enrollees being lost. The governor projected a total cost to California of an estimated $28.4 billion in federal funding over the coming decade, potentially leading to a loss of 3.4 million Californians' healthcare coverage. As we talked about, there are also some significant program changes to SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, known as CalFresh here in California, notably shifting some of the financial burden both to the state and to counties. There's a couple of things happening simultaneously, including raising the state's responsibility as well as potentially local costs for administrative costs from 50% to 75%, while also simultaneously reducing the federal support of the food benefit itself, the first time in the program's history. The governor's office projected the federal funding cut to SNAP to be between $2.8 to $5.4 billion annually. And starting in 2028, the state contributions will be linked to their SNAP payment errors. We were able to confirm after last week's PAL meeting that the latest data available for California from 2024 through the state Social Services Department had the state's error rate at 10.98%, placing it in the 10% error rate category. And this would make California responsible for up to 15% match of the food benefit costs. I think it's important to note that I think folks are fairly concerned that the shift in both administrative costs and the error rate kind of sets us up for failure. Having less money to administer the program is, you know, probably on the natural going to impact error rates. The PPIC also released a May 2025 fact sheet on California's nutritional safety net, which highlighted that in 24-25, the admin costs at that time were projected to be $2.5 billion. The governor has already stated he considers any cost shift from the feds to be a shared state and county responsibility. He further noted cost shifts in the range of $1.35 billion to $4 billion annually to the state and counties. This cost shift is due to a mandatory shift of 5% of food benefits to the state and a mandatory 25% shift in program administrative costs to the state and the county. He projected at least 735,000 recipients would be at risk of losing their CalFresh benefit. Some are urging policymakers to act soon to protect Californians from the impacts of HR 1. The California Budget and Policy Center, a nonpartisan research and analysis nonprofit, released a statement last week calling on policymakers to reopen the state budget either in August or during the special session to address these devastating cuts. They suggested that state leaders can start by ending costly tax breaks that benefit the wealthy and large corporations, the very groups being prioritized in Trump's budget, and instead invest in the well-being of Californians. Lots of folks are talking about the fact that a special session could be convened, and the governor can declare a fiscal emergency under the provisions of Article 4 of the state constitution. The legislature would be required to focus solely on issues addressing the shortfalls in programs like Medicaid, housing, and public health. In such a session, lawmakers would have 45 days or suspend all other business until their emergency bills are passed. These bills would bypass the regular legislative deadlines and require only a simple majority unless they involve taxes or the levying of urgency clauses. and they must be tied to the state of emergency that the governor puts forward in his proclamation. Obviously, given the long kind of range of years involved, we fully anticipate additional budget and policy discussions that lawmakers will have to do to adjust to the federal disinvestment. Today, we do have a Senate budget meeting. They are going to hear one trailer bill on social services and three budget bill juniors. Most of them are technical fixes to what they just passed a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, people are wondering about kind of the future economy of California, given some of these federal cuts and the state's ability to backfill some of them. They certainly won't be able to backfill all of them. The LAO reported their new car registration, and those are often considered an indicator of the overall health of California's economy because they reflect, you know, some key facts such as consumer spending, consumer confidence, and overall state economic health. The May report noted a sharp 10% decline from April, marking the lowest total since June of 2024. The LAO has speculated that the volatility over the past few months might be due to the consumers expediting their purchases in anticipation of the new federal tariffs on imported vehicles that began in April. Despite the tariffs, new car prices remained relatively stable through May. Overall, Californians are still buying fewer cars than before the COVID-19 pandemic, with May 2025 registrations being 8% lower than they were in May of 2019. It's hard to know if this decline is strictly attributable to the tariffs or could signal greater economic headwinds. Last week, we brought you SB 16, a bill by Senator Blakespear regarding homelessness. We had brought it forward for an opposed position. It had some controversial amendments that we brought to the committee, which would have required HAP applicants to adopt a governor-aligned encampment ordinance and meet escalating homeless housing targets over 5 years, reaching 60% of the regional point-in-time count. It also greatly expanded both city and county roles in addressing unsheltered homelessness, and would have counted interim housing towards regional housing needs. With no future state funding committed in the bill and growing stakeholder concern, the bill was pulled from its final hearing this week, which means that it has now effectively become a two-year bill and will not be acted on until 2026. Lastly, our county-sponsored bill, SB 617, regarding California Worker Adjustment and Retraining Act, was scheduled for hearing in the Assembly Labor and Employment Committee last Wednesday, the 9th. The bill received bipartisan support and passed unanimously on the consent calendar. The bill has been referred to the Assembly Appropriations Committee with a recommendation to place it on consent calendar there, and we will report on that when the bill is heard. As was noted last week, Friday is the policy committee deadline, and then lawmakers will break for their summer recess, which will last until August 18th. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for a very full report. Supervisor Fortunato Bass, questions, comments?
Yes, thank you for a very thorough report. Good news on SB 16 and 617. I did appreciate hearing that there is hopefully some talk about reopening the budget discussions in August and September, so thank you for that information. Knowing that the tax breaks are roughly equal to the, you know, 10-year impacts on Medicaid and Medi-Cal, I am curious if you're hearing any talk of an appetite for looking at the revenue side of the equation, knowing that the state and our counties do need to work together?
That's a great question, Supervisor. I will say, absent any of the big, beautiful bill, we already had one of our major revenue provisions set to expire, and that is a tax on higher income earners. It was originally known as Prop 30, became Prop 55. It happened kind of during our last difficult budget times under Governor Brown. I do know that some groups on the outside are looking to extend that and seeing if there might be an appetite for a different revenue measure. I don't know that people have really decided on what that could be. And I think clearly folks are concerned about whether or not some of the concerns coming out of the November election regarding affordability might kind of hamper some of that discussion. But I think it's pretty clear, because one of the things we haven't talked about either is the managed care organization tax and it going away, another significant hit for California's budget. So I definitely think there may be a forcing function here where people will have to look at revenues, because between SNAP, Medicaid, and MCO, these are significant structural issues for the state.
Thank you.
So next week, our board will be hearing essentially the impacts on the county in terms of these programmatic changes and what you mentioned about the shared city and county responsibility that's being shifted from the state. I'm going to assume, and maybe you can help clarify if this is correct, is that the impacts from Medi-Cal cuts or Medicaid cuts will be timed with the redetermination as tied to whether or not somebody meets that employment requirement that's under the law now. And so we're going to have to look at this in more of a phased approach that might extend probably a couple years in terms of the budgetary impacts.
Absolutely. I think Emily brought up an excellent point, which is, you know, we do have some past data and experience here on things like redetermination and what that means as far as who kind of falls off. And what, you know, the associated savings are. But I also think, candidly, some of this is just going to have a chilling effect on people ever going into the program at all. We don't have as much experience on that. You know, I think, you know, we also, I'm wondering if lawmakers will revisit some of the recent changes they made to the Medi-Cal program in advance of the Big Beautiful Bill, including a premium payment. And, you know, if they come back in a special session or decide to revisit these issues, they may go back into some of those as well, now that we have more information than we did when they passed the state budget.
That's a good point. So somebody won't really know until they're no longer eligible, until they've submitted their redetermination application, because you're saying there's some people may be preemptive and not even apply, or because they're fearful that they won't get approved, essentially.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, clearly I think, you know, some of the press around this has probably had a chilling impact on people who may be in a mixed immigration status household, for example. They may not want to, even if they're completely eligible, apply, because they don't know what the ramifications may be to the others in their household. I will say, you know, we definitely know, and the state has done this previously, whenever you make redetermination more burdensome on the natural, you will lose people in the program.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Medi-Cal program is essentially the largest funding program for the county when it comes to health care, and then the second largest is our SNAP or CalFresh program, and that's going to be very... very forthcoming in terms of how we help try to get the enrollment back appropriately. All very difficult things we have to deal with. But I appreciate your report and your clarification. Are there any public comments or questions on this item?
I have no speakers on this item.
Thank you. Are there any public comments on items that are not on today's agenda?
Hannah, do you have a comment on the state?
Oh, yeah. Hi, this is Hannah Hamilton, Policy Director with Social Services Agency. Just wanted to see if Amy could weigh in on the impact to our realignment budgets as a result of the lower vehicle licensing fees?
Yes.
10%. Do
Yeah, I
you
was gonna say it's only 1 month, Hannah, but certainly VLF is a portion of realignment funding. So to the degree car sales remain depressed, there definitely will be potential impact on the realignment funding streams.
Thank you.
And no, we have no speakers for public comment.
Okay. Well, those online, please identify themselves so we can thank you for your participation.
Good afternoon, Jessica Blakemore, Alameda County Health.
Good afternoon, Valerie Arkin, Supervisor Miley's office.
Elvia Quiroga, Alameda County Treasurer, Tax Collectors.
Hannah Hamilton, Social Services Agency. Good afternoon.
Thank you all for your participation, and this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.